order.
If I leave, it's over, right?
Three people are missing this evening. We have excused absences, Jeff Gentz, John O'Day, and Aaron Pohlmeier. So, but we do have a quorum, and we'll begin with citizen comments. So if anyone would like to say something about anything, this is the time to do it.
I'm going to jump up.
All right, good.
You are, huh? How you doing, Your Honor?
Good. Nice to see everybody. A lot of our judges are in judicial education this week, so me and Judge Wagner are in charge at the courthouse.
That was funny.
Finally. We just want to reiterate that we still feel strongly about our legal secretaries. They've had that classification from the year 2000. It's 2015. They're doing more work than they did in 2000. Our caseloads are increased tremendously. All sorts of security issues. I had an incident last week where a litigant almost went after my clerk. And the litigant went down to Judge Wilk's courtroom and got arrested. The clerks that work in the other office, they're protected. The public just can't walk in there. There's glass, there's locks. Our clerks are in the open. They deal with that every day. And we still strongly believe that they should stay as legal secretaries. We're not asking them to be as paralegals. We're just asking to keep them where they were since 2000. And their duties, again, if you talk to them, are so increased through our court system. And I'd ask you to reconsider it. And thank you for letting me talk today.
Thank you. Further citizen comments? Good morning. Amy.
Hello. I'm Carol Gonzalez. Most of you know who I am. Just a few points that I wanted to hit on again. One being that there still is no current list of titles of what current employees are currently being called and what the proposed titles will be if the recommendations are approved. I don't understand why we don't have this. And I would like to see it. Most employees don't even know what classification they're being put into because they don't know their new titles. So how can they come here and talk about their positions and where they're going when they don't even know? The second point was just on behalf of Highway Department. And three different pay scales for people doing this exact same job. It was blamed on contract negotiations and in the past. And I guess the point that I want to make is there are no more contracts, so why can't they fix it? Why can't you pay these people for doing the same wage, paying the same wage for doing the same job? I also wanted to hit on, like, us office associates. We don't know what their new name is. I've been given two different titles. They used to start out at $16.80 an hour, and now they start out at $13. I don't understand that. And I would just advocate that they go back to where they used to start. As a taxpayer, I'd like to know what the cost of this study is in its entirety. I've gotten no answers on that, and I don't know if anybody knows, meaning this part of it costs so much. There's the corrections part of it coming up, and then next year the rest of the employees are being studied. And then there's a yearly ongoing evaluation of the market. I'd like to know what this is going to cost. My taxes have gone up every year for the last 4 or 5 years. And we were told about a big elephant in the room as far as health insurance. our health insurance over, I'm a 29-year employee, and I've watched our health insurance employee part as far as co-pays and premiums, and I've just seen it be cut every single year. So, I ended up to have a cyst removed paying $1,000 out of my pocket. So I don't understand what certain supervisors are talking about that, we have this Cadillac health plan. It's not true. And I can show you my bills to prove it. I also have my job description here. And according to all of the duties that I have, I should be bumped up to a paralegal. I prepare court documents, and I'd be glad to make a copy of this for you. But I guess the point in that is that if this consultant can justify all of her study and justify why she's moved everybody where she's moved them and changed the titles, I guess I would be happy where I'm at. But if you're going to move one class of people, then I really think you need to look at every class of people. You need to look at the office associates. You need to look at highway. You need to look at my position because I'd like a raise. I'm not getting one. And my boss can't be here because he does answer to the county exec. I'm just saying that if you're going to consider only one group of employees based on their opinions and based on their boss's opinions, then you're doing an injustice to the rest of the employees. Majority of employees that are getting raises from this study are management. So are we only being competitive when it comes to management positions, or are we being competitive for everyone? That's all I have to say.
All right, thank you. Any other comments?
I can't stand not to talk, so here I am. We can talk around a lot of things about this plan, but the real beef for the judges and the clerks is that I believe in equal pay for equal work. And the work that is being done by the courtroom clerks, our judicial legal secretaries, however we're calling them, I don't even know what the title is anymore, is identical and more than the paralegals that are defined in the description and also the legal secretaries. And why they are being demoted from legal secretary to the other classification, I do not understand. Because their work description fits both of those categories. So that's one thing. And also that it has that security issue that Judge Milosuskas raised. In 2000, Judge Frelich, who was a vociferous and good advocate in the old days, got the state budget to include legal clerks for the judges, which meant attorneys. And it wasn't one for every, it was a certain percentage. And they boosted up the court, what do they call that, Becky? The court supplement, the court, the court grant, okay? And they boosted that up for us to be able to have that position. We worked with Gail at that time and said, we'll forego a legal clerk so that we can have the clerks have the position that they have. And that's what we did. So there is no question in my mind that we had an understanding about that. And I just don't understand the demotion when you gave to us. And I looked at all of these descriptions and the old description and the new description and so on. The court clerks do those jobs. And there is absolutely no question they do what the corp counsel secretary does. They do, that's one of the legal secretaries, as I understand it. The sheriff's secretary. Certainly, the court clerk has far more diverse assignments. And then when you look at the paralegals, if anybody thinks that those court clerks aren't doing a lot of legal work with us, I just don't understand it. Nobody from that company ever talked to a single solitary judge about the job. Not one of us. And Becky told me that they never consulted her. So I don't understand it. So we would like you to consider that. And I just think equal work for equal pay. So thanks. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Further, the other?
Thank you. My name's Heather McBride. And I know this has kind of been beaten up, this issue. But our group as a whole, the 14 of us, we just want what's fair. I've been doing this job, working for court commissioners, for 12 years. And I've been doing the job as a legal secretary for that long. The proposed job description that was made up by the county based on this study is what I do. I do it every day. I do more than what's listed there. I stay late to make sure that my commissioner's work is done right. I go home at night thinking, oh my gosh, did I get that done right? I get there early to make sure that the work is done. I love my job. I love the people that I work with. But this is making it very hard. I don't feel appreciated. So basically, none of us in our group can understand the demotion. We don't comprehend any bit of it. If you look at a piece of paper, that job description that's put out for us based on this study, I'm doing it. I do more than that. And we just want to be recognized. I don't want to be looked at as a courtroom clerk only, because I do my legal secretary work. And that's all we want. We understand that a lot of people are benefiting from this study, and we're not trying to take any of that away from them. We're really not. We just want what is fair and what is right. And I hope that you all can take that into consideration for our group. Thanks.
Thank you. Further comments from anyone? Further comments? All right, seeing none, we'll close that part of the agenda and then move on to the next item. I have no reports to any committee members. All right, then we'll move on to item number five, the Sheriff's Federal Inmate Report, which you should have received. I received it today by email. Is there somebody from Chuck? Did you want to comment on that?
I received nothing.
And if you'd like me to, Mr. Chairman.
I received nothing.
Check your email?
When? I checked it up this afternoon. There was nothing there.
That's when I received it.
In fact, I heard it was pulled because there wasn't.
Yeah, it's in there.
Right? Am I right?
What was pulled?
You want to this help?
Are we talking about the Silver Lake thing?
No, no.
No,
that's pulled.
That was
that's
taken
pulled.
Off.
Okay.
This is a federal inmate report.
Right.
Okay. Sorry about that. Sorry.
I got
about
it on my email here. I'm going to open it up. This is just a report from January through April about the our federal inmate population. Our ICE immigration is down. And we're running right now, we're averaging from January to April about 183 inmates when we should be having 199. And that's what the number was set at, but we have no control over that. Our federal inmates are up, our U.S. Marshal inmates, but our immigration detainees is down. And that's what's causing the slump right now. But we're not the only ones. It's around in all the entities in this area that hold immigration inmates. Everything is down right now. So. That being said, the month of May, we're running around 201 So it has picked up in the month of May, and I think we have to remember that it runs from January to December, and as long as we can average out to 199, then we've met our goal. So I don't know where this is going. It's up again, and we've always said it's like the Dow goes up and down, up and down. But we really don't have any control over it, so that's what we're doing right now. So we've got a gap. Hopefully, we can make that up, but there's really no guarantee.
Ron?
Do you have any reason why the fluctuation is because of what happened in Washington? Were they suggesting that they ease up on the, you know, the illegals that are here or something? Is that part of it, or?
Well, it's our understanding that all the civilian detainees that we hold are not here only because of they've entered the country without documentation, they're illegal. The ones that we hold have committed a crime somewhere, and they are just waiting for being deported. They've done their time wherever they did it, and the federal government has picked them up, and now we're like a holding center for them, and we have what's called JPATS flights, and they fly them out. Most of them are Hispanic, but we have them go all over the world, and we're really just holding them for deportation. So Washington politics could change, you know, and say that we're not going to let them go. I mean, they can stay, but right now it says they have to leave. That's really what we hold.
When's the last time we got an increase in daily room and board?
The $70. We haven't had an increase almost since the inception.
And that's how long?
We've started housing more, about 2003 or '04 is when Sheriff Beth increased the numbers. So, but we've talked to our, we don't have an agreement, we have a cap agreement with U.S. Marshals Service, and the U.S., and immigration piggybacks onto that, pays the price. And on several occasions, we have put the numbers together for increases, but we haven't met with good reception on that, so we're kind of the best deal in town, and that's why they send so many here. So it's, you know, it's good and bad. We're at $70 a day, so that's why they like to bring them here. If we went to $96 a day, they'd push them somewhere else, whereas that's so. But they like us because of our location, but that doesn't mean we're always going to be at $199, so. But we've had quite a few. But our marshal inmates are up, we're up to about 73. We normally run about 50 or 60.
So does that mean that maybe less overtime then, or what?
Well, it doesn't mean that. That doesn't really contribute too much to it. What contributes to our overall population is down. Our local population is way down. And I attribute that to the fact that we have a lot of jail diversionary programs, and that's what, we don't want to put people in jail that don't need to be there. A couple of years ago, we were running around 600 local inmates in jail, maybe higher, and on top of immigration, it put our population almost at 900, sometimes to 1,000. But right now, we're running about 850. You know, several times last month, our in-house population was down below 500, and I haven't seen that for a long time. But we attribute that to good jail diversionary programs, pre-diversionary and post-diversionary. So that helps keep it down. We really don't want people in jail that don't really need to be in jail.
The ankle bracelet thing, that helps too, right?
Yeah, there's not a lot out on that. There's about 29, and that's because those type of candidates aren't readily available anymore because, again, it's those programs, not everybody can qualify for that. We used to have a lot qualify for it because a lot of people were in jail that probably didn't need to be there. But now it's kind of being the way it's supposed to be. So that's good. That's good around. It has a dark side to it, yeah. You're trying to get federal inmate money, but the good side is we're not locking people up that really don't need to be there, so.
Further discussion on the, with Chuck? All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Next item are the minutes before you. Do you have any corrections or discussion?
Move to approve.
Second.
Further discussion on the minutes. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Pass. And the next item is the resolution to approve the recommendations of the classification compensation study. I place this at the direction of the county board. It's referred it back to the finance committee. So here it is this evening. Is there any discussion or any motions? Rick?
I'd like to mention a few things that I found out while looking into this. some of the judicial secretaries had claimed that they had been called legal secretaries. I contacted Robert Riedel and asked him, can you look up the history and find out what happened? How did this come about? Well, it's quite interesting to find that back in 1969, county had paid for a study for the wage classifications and relative pay rates for those classifications. It's kind of like a deja vu in reverse. The result of their study came out that the, I'll call them judicial secretaries, came out at a higher pay scale than the legal secretaries, than the secretaries for the district attorney. So what happened is the secretaries for the district attorney didn't believe this was fair, and they had the backing of Robert Jambois. They filed a grievance, and the grievance was resolved, making them legal secretaries. However, as they were below the judicial secretaries, the settlement of that grievance put them about 20-some cents above. So there was another grievance which brought then the judicial secretaries up equal with the legal secretaries from the district attorney's office. It's interesting because that previous study said that the judicial secretary's job duties required a higher rate of pay. When I look at the three different job descriptions between the executive secretary, the legal secretary, and the judicial secretaries, they're, for all practical purposes, I mean, they're identical with one exception, is that the judicial secretaries, in addition to the requirements of the other two, also require them to be notaries. So I say to myself, you know, I think there's some good judgment and good reason to feel that maybe those judicial secretaries should get a pay raise, should be equal. I had breakfast with County Executive Cruiser this morning, and this was part of the discussion. Interesting what Jim had said. I don't really understand why, but what he had said was that he doesn't believe that the judicial secretaries, this I understand, the judicial secretary should not be raised two pay grades even with a paralegal. However, he has no problem with them being raised one pay grade to be the same pay grade as the district attorney secretaries. However, he does not want the title changed. Give them the same pay, but leave their title the same. In other words, bring them up from what was it, a 5 to a 6. So, you know, it would be nice if we could just say there's a lot of justification for this one. Yeah, there's other people that want increases also. This one seems to have the most justification. I will say that, you know, I believe in the integrity and the honesty of our judges that have quite a bit of knowledge of the people that work under them. So I would very much like to see this whole thing resolved by making the judicial secretaries, raising them from a 5 to a 6, but leaving their title the same. And I would make that motion. To resolve this.
Is there a second? I'll second it, put it on the table. Further discussion?
I have a few things. I come from a corporate background, and I truly respect the job that everyone does for the county. It is not an easy job. I don't work for corporate anymore. I work for a nonprofit. And coming from corporate, your boss comes along and he says to you, hey, we're going to change your job. We're not going to give you a pay increase, but here's a lot of extra work that you get to do with it. You don't get to go to complain to anyone. You just have to do it. if you don't like the job or you don't like the what you're doing now, you always have the option of leaving. I don't want to see our employees leave. However, I'm having a very difficult time with this because there's a process to go through, and I don't want to hear the word appeal anymore. I don't want to hear the word demotion. These aren't demotions, and it's not an appeal process. There's a process to go through if you want to talk to someone about having your pay increased. Typically, you go to your boss, you say, I don't like my pay, I want it increased. Your boss would go to the manager goes to the vice president goes to the CFO, who says, nope, don't have any money. Typically. Otherwise, he says, go ahead, put it in the budget, see if we have money, and see if it gets passed at budget time. But you don't tell your employees until it's been passed that they have the raise, because it just isn't good practice. You don't have a choice. It's not up to the employees to make those final decisions. If we start allowing the employees to go, and I have no problem with the employees going to their bosses and trying to fight for the raise. That's what they should do, and the bosses should go and fight for them, for their employees. But there's a process to do it. It's not an appeal process, because that's what it's just not an appeal process. There's a process to doing it. Just like now, if anyone wants a raise, they do it at budget time. Right? It's all done at budget time.
This is in the budget.
I understand that. But don't change it because of one group. We have two more groups to get through. Are we going to allow every group to come back to us and say, I don't like this, I want you to change it? Then what happens? We are not the experts. We hired a group, an outside group, to do a study for us, a study that the county board asked for. I'm not an expert in it. The judges are not experts in it. And the employees are not experts in it. We have to allow the process to work. And I think everyone needs to understand that. We are not the experts.
Right.
I would like to think that the we had experts back
can
in...
Can I talk?
19, oh, yeah, go
does
ahead.
He get to talk twice before I can
yes.
talk?
He had his hand up. Christ. I called him. Yeah. We will not overlook you. Go ahead.
The experts back in 1969, I believe they were experts.
96.
No, 96. Thank you. 69. I go back a long ways.
That would go back a really long
way. Yeah. My time.
yeah. But I believe, you know, there's some credence for them to believe that the judicial secretaries deserved the pay increase that they gave them. I mean, they were experts. I also believe that the supervisors, or the, in this case, the judges, have a pretty good, we can call them experts, on what their employees' requirements are. So, you know, what I see is this whole job study is, yeah, I see there's a few complaints. But there's one glaring complaint that sticks out. And while no study is perfect, I don't see a problem with this committee making a small adjustment to make it better. And I think this adjustment can put everything to ease, resolve our problems, and get this thing over with. And that's why I really hope that we have an open mind and we support this, and let's put it behind us and move on.
Right.
Firstly, I'm going to start off by saying that I want to get the answer to what you are talking about. So I asked because if we're going to go with the process, we already have a committee of the whole meeting scheduled for the 21st, if I'm correct. So I don't know where this would go, even if we approved it tonight, which it doesn't appear that we are. But even if we did, it seems to me we have to let that process run out. And the question that I sent to Bill, Mr. Riedel, was I wanted to know the rationale of the consultant for the placement of those two positions, the judicial, the clerk courts, and the other position. I wanted to get the rationale from her at that committee of the whole meeting as to what that is, to solve that problem. And there are other questions that I've heard tonight from the jailer, what the jailers are, and the other things that I've heard. I would be happy to, if someone would get that information to me, is the question you want to ask, I would be happy to request that from the personnel department to look at that. Because I have questions, okay. Why were they put where they were? Let's have her justify where she put them. At least, maybe nobody's mine will change, but at least we'll have an idea of why it was done. So I think we're out of order here in proposing this before we have that committee at a whole meeting on the 21st.
I agree.
Is there further discussion, Rick?
Yeah, and Ron, to respond to you, when I had talked to Riddle, a similar question had come up. And when the study was done, they had the ability to look at other legal secretaries in the private sector. They had the ability to look at paralegals in the private sector. But there is no comparable judicial secretaries to compare with the public sector to the private sector. So it kind of left a void. And I think that's what happened here.
Well, whether it's a void or not, Rick, if I can, it's the committee of the whole meeting is set up for the 21st. The chairman set it up. So this is on the agenda because I suspect the chairman says it was referred to us, you put it there. But we're putting the cart ahead of the horse here because we got to go through that committee of the whole meeting and maybe we can get some answers. Maybe we can satisfy the complaint here.
And we could, make a recommendation.
But the consultant is going to come in. How can I make a recommendation when I'm not sure? So I'm saying that we're getting ahead of ourselves. We've got to go to the committee of the whole meeting, and she's going to come in, and we're going to ask her questions and we're putting them in writing. I put the one to the personnel department. Give me the rationale between putting this position where they are. That's a fair question, okay? So how are we going to get, we're not going to get this thing settled until we have the committee of the whole meeting. So I think the motion, you can vote on it, but I can read the room here. It's going to be a 2-2 tie. It ain't going anywhere. So if you want to go ahead with your vote. But I'm not against taking a look at it, but I want to have the consultant tell me why she did it. And then everybody can make their own judgment.
Further discussion? All right, we'll take a vote. Rick?
Aye.
Bon?
No.
Kim?
No.
Aye. So 2-2, it fails. Is there a motion to approve the recommendation and study?
I'll make a motion to approve it, but it's not going to matter because we still have to take it to the committee of the whole.
No, we don't have to take the committee of the whole. We take it to the county board for action. So.
Are you suggesting that we're going to take this to the county board on Tuesday night before the committee of the whole meeting on the 21st?
That certainly is possible.
No.
No.
Do you have a motion or not?
Nope. Then I withdraw my motion.
Further discussion on night number 7. All right, we'll move on to number 8, Public Works.
I don't know why that got before.
Hello.
The Parks Department is asking permission to apply to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Stewardship Grant Funding for the purposes of requesting a 50-50 grant to build mountain bike trails and skill improvement tracking in the Caney expansion. The total cost of the project is $343,000, of which if we were awarded and we accepted it, would be county's cost of $171,500.
All right, discussion? Any motions?
Move to approve.
I'll second that.
All right, further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
It passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item is the CABA report. Todd.
Todd's going to pass out hard copies.
Yeah, I think these were delivered electronically, but I didn't get hard copies here.
Give me a chance to pass those. Jump in.
Does everybody, anybody else want a copy?
Copy.
So good evening, everybody. Thank you. here in front of you to just share first quarter 2015 revolving loan fund reports and just updates on recent activity. There's several items here. I'll just try to cover them quickly and then be able to respond to any questions. In these reports, we typically just try to give you kind of a high-level overview of recent development activity. The back of the first page just summarizes some of our recent business retention expansion activity. There's a short report there on some of the visits we've had with recent companies to just kind of give you a flavor for what's going on in the business climate, some of the companies we've met with, possible projects. And so certainly be happy to answer questions about that. Moving on to the loan funds, the first report you'll see is a reconciliation of the EDA revolving loan fund. The first page of that report essentially just gives you a reconciliation of the account showing that as of 3/31/15, there's about $500,000 balance in the EDA revolving loan fund account. The next page, which is page five, just gives you a list of about 10 or 11 loans that are made out of that fund and kind of current status of those loans, principal balances outstanding, and certainly happy to answer any questions. All of the funds or all of the loans issued in this revolving loan fund are current and up to date. The next one is the county revolving loan fund. And if you just kind of get to the bottom line of that, there's about $1.37 million in that revolving loan fund. And I guess I'd ask you to recall we have worked closely with the county board to modify the contract that governs that account with the idea that a portion of those funds will be put into our Salem Business Park development. So that balance of about $1.37 million, we anticipate using about $1 million out of that fund towards our Salem Business Park development. Just by way of an update on that, we expect to close on the purchase of the real estate in early to mid-June and begin kind of the development of that business park. We're kind of working on some finishing touches with respect to a development agreement with the town of Salem, but fully anticipate moving forward with that in early to mid-June. The next page, page seven, just has a listing of the eight or so loans in the county revolving loan fund. And again, their outstanding balances and the like. There is a note here. There's a loan in default. Paddock Lake Heights LLC defaulted on a loan, and there's still some litigation and collection proceedings going on there. But just wanted to note that. And then the last loan fund is the CKC revolving loan fund. This is a community development block grant loan fund that is the consolidated Kenosha County fund. That fund, you know, the reconciliation there shows about $3 million in that fund. We do have one pledge outstanding. You might have saw this week that a company called FNA Group is establishing a facility in Pleasant Prairie. We've made a pledge to them to finance a part of that and would work with them if they decide to pursue that funding. And then there's the page nine just shows the four loans in that fund and those current outstanding balances. And then the very last report is the high impact fund. I guess page 10 of this report shows a reconciliation of that account. There's about $1 million in that fund. There are about $487,000 of approved commitments that have yet to be dispersed as of the date of this report, leaving about $530,000 in that fund. And then the very last page, page 11, shows the five companies that have participated in this program so far and the amounts awarded to those companies and status of those to date. So certainly happy to answer any questions, but that's a quick overview of the loan funds that we manage on behalf of Kenosha County.
All right, thank you. And discussion, Rick?
Yeah, through the chair, questions, but not really related to this study. There's a requirement that has been mentioned, and I want to get it clear, that people borrowing from one of these funds, and I don't know if it's a high impact loan fund, has tied in with it a wage requirement that they pay a certain amount. What is that amount, and what fund is related to that?
So various of these revolving loan funds certainly have investment and employment requirements. The loan funds do not have any specific wage requirements, though I think when we're underwriting these loans, we certainly take that into account and understand what level of wages are being paid, and that governs, you know, how much we're willing to invest or lend or support a project with. With the high impact fund, the major requirements are a project has to result in at least 50 new jobs being created and or $3 million of new investment. And there's a kind of a target that any of that the average wages of the positions being created should exceed the county's average wage.
Which is about what?
Depending on what source you're looking at, it's probably somewhere in the, like an average annual salary is probably, don't quote me on this, but it's probably right around $35,000, $36,000 a year. So that would translate into $17.5, $18 bucks an hour. Okay. So typically with that high impact fund, we'd like to see the average wage of all positions created as a result of the project exceed that. And in the instance of the projects we've funded with that so far, Bradshaw Medical, Hanna Cylinders, Kennel Manufacturing, Niagara Bottling, and Incinerator, I safely say we're well above that target.
You know what the average hourly wage is in Kenosha?
That's that number. If you just go all industries, average hourly wage, all positions, it's the average, and it's about 30. The most recent report I saw was about $35,000 or $36,000 a year. So $17.50, $18 bucks an hour.
All right, further discussion?
How's Salem coming along?
Yeah, so we just talked about that with respect to the CRLF. We have 42 acres under contract. Our development agreement with the town of Salem would allow us to purchase another 40 acres that this town has already purchased. We've needed to rezone the property, which is done. We've needed to start the process of creating a TIF district, which is underway. We've needed to draft business park covenants, which are done. We've needed to put a development agreement in place with the town, and that's probably the last, I would say, kind of big open item in terms of the proceeding. And then we've had to do some due diligence on the property, an environmental study, title work, surveying, and most, if not all, of the items that needed to be done are done, and we fully expect to complete the development agreement and then look to acquire the site in early to mid-June, and then almost immediately begin kind of the engineering for the infrastructure into the park.
Now, I remember you had at one time said that you may or may not have been talking to a couple businesses that were looking at shovel-ready properties. Are they still inquiring, or?
So we continue to pursue multiple opportunities to have companies buy lots in this park. I don't necessarily like advertising too much,
right?
Or speaking out of turn about who we're talking to or about what, but we have had multiple companies express some interest in this development, and we've had more than just, you know, a casual conversation about when this park's going to come online, what the price per acre of the lots would be, what's allowable in the park and not, based on the draft covenants we have. So we feel like there is some interest in development in the park from businesses in the region.
Good. So I just want to mention that my mother used to work for the City of Waukesha Planning Department. She worked there for 27 years. And she reads about Kenosha County in the Waukesha paper up there all the time. And all she can say is, it's too bad that Waukesha doesn't take a page from our book down here, because they just cannot believe what we're doing. So you're doing an awesome job.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, further discussion? Thank you for coming.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Todd.
Thanks.
Good job.
Thanks. Audit of bills.
I'll distribute the document for the bills for your signature.
And we're now in the section of reports. Personnel?
No report.
Go ahead, Al.
You want to do yours first?
You can do yours first.
I want to distribute a lot of different reports here. I want to make sure everybody got them, because we had a little confusion this week with April being out, whether you got all the reports in your packet or not. The first report I'm giving you is the, on top is a report on the levy limit. I'm not making any recommendation tonight. We'll bring back the resolution in June as required by the policy that the county board must pass it no later than June. These are some of the elements that we have right now that we feel will either increase or decrease the levy. I'm not going to go through all of them, but I just wanted to give you guys a little pre-review on this and a little thought on where we want to go with this next month. The other reports that are in here are the treasurer's reports, the registered deeds reports, the sheriff overtime report. I think the county clerk has a report in here. But I think the main one I wanted to focus on is give you a little preview is on that levy limit, the advisory levy limit.
Yeah.
And you can see the elements there that will increase the levy and a few that will decrease the levy. I'm not making any recommendation at this point, but I guess I'm not making any recommendation at all, but the fact is these are the elements we know right now as we're forecasting them, and the committee and the board makes the decision on the advisory percentage increase.
Anything further?
That's it.
All right. Dave?
I can talk about the levy limit policy, if you like.
Sure.
And I think you all got a copy of the Resolution 42. It was adopted in 2004. And but before I got into that, I thought I would distribute a history of our fund balance.
Before we get into the fund balance report, not the levy limit.
Can I go back, Mr. Chairman? Can I go back? I want to go back to the levy limit recommendation. I want to have the recommendation of the levy limit. When do we usually come in with that?
June. The policy says no later than June.
Okay, so.
And that's why I'm giving you an initial.
It's kind of hard for. I mean, we only have four members of a seven-person committee here tonight. That's what Mr. Higgins said. How are we going to. Are you asking us to make a recommendation?
No, I'm not asking. No, we will bring it in on June 11th.
Yeah, okay.
And you can make a recommendation there. I'm just trying to give you a little preview on what the elements are that will increase the levy. And if you look at that report, basically, depending on what the percentage is, if it were zero, we would have to cut the levy by about $3.7 million. Okay? And you can basically say our levy is about $60 million. So, in fact, 1% is a $600,000 increase in the levy. Okay.
So if we said the levy limit has to be 2%, you'd have to cut $2.5 million.
Correct. And that's based on the forecast. And that's very typical of what I bring in every year. I'm anywhere between $2.5 and $3.5 million based on what I know in May and June of a particular year as opposed to what we know.
But where we're at right now, you're saying we're how much?
Three point seven, almost $4 million.
But that's what the low increase, which would be how many percent?
That would be a 0% increase.
0%.
But it just gives you a little food for thought.
And 1% raises it how much?
About $600,000.
So we're looking at 7-8% if we just want to stay even.
If you want to stay even.
That's the limit we're in, right?
At this current time, and so like I said, it's very typical of the projections we have at this time of year. Things change. As you're very well aware, things change. It's very hard to tell exactly where we're going to come in May and June as opposed to October and November when we propose the budget.
Well, I'm on the Gateway Board, and we just did our budget, and we had to do a lot of things we didn't want to do because we're froze at new construction.
Yeah.
Okay, right. The Gateway is, and so we're not froze at anything, and what we're looking at here is we need 7% in order to, correct me if I'm wrong, just to break even.
Yeah, and a lot depends on new construction and equalized value, which we don't.
New construction, we figured new construction got us $500,000.
Yeah.
I mean, $500,000, okay?
Yeah, and if you look, I have the number in this report at 1.68, that's what new construction was last year, and I don't recall.
And Kenosha, new construction's higher than the overall three counties, so that's what it is.
I would believe that.
Okay, thank you.
All right, anything else?
On Al's report, I think you're completed with your report, Sal.
Yes.
One of the, what I'll talk about is there was a discussion about talking about our fund balance reserve policy, and I had sent this, the 2004 policy that the board adopted. I sent it out in your packet so you could read it, and we, if the committee likes, we could revisit this policy and make amendments to it and incorporate a new policy as part of the 2016 budget. That's what I would recommend as far as process goes. You know, we could bring this back to a couple of committees and have some general discussion about it.
We would do that after we made the recommendation in June?
Well, I mean, I could put it on, we could put it on as a discussion item every month up until budget, and then we could, during budget hearing.
Are you suggesting that we do this before we make a recommendation?
I don't think the two have to be tied.
Okay, okay.
The reserve policy can be set separate from the recommendation on the levy.
All right.
The reserve policy that we had was patterned after Government Finance Officers Association policy, and we use 17% of general fund spending. There's different ways of looking at it, but in any business or any government can look at reserves, and anyone that's analyzing that entity would look at reserves that they have and make you know, financial judgments based on the reserves they have. But a common standard across the board almost everywhere is roughly 2 months of spending. You know, you have enough to cover 2 months of spending. So that's what 17% is. 16.666% is 2 months of spending. The GFOA talked about using a percent of revenue or a percent of spending, but it's really not that, doesn't make that much of a difference which way you go. So what I did was I distributed this document, which is a history going back to 1960 of our reserves. And when I first came in here 30 years ago, one of the things I did was, well, I did a lot of things, but one thing I did was some historical analysis on a lot of the fiscal metrics of the county. And so I did this, and back at that time, there was an entity called the Bureau of Municipal Audit that used to do our audits, and they would provide these thick leather books, and they would do our audits once every 2 years. And so I actually went back to those books from 1960 and pulled the reserve number out of those books. So this, I think this study I started 30 years ago, taking old dusty books that I found, and then just kept the study up, or the analysis up to date every year. And you can see I didn't have the general fund spending until 97. In the 70s, the state changed the law and allowed CPA firms to do the local government audits, and they allowed the CPA firms to compete against the Bureau of Municipal Audit. So what happened was the BME faded out, and we started having a CPA firm do our audits in the late 70s. So the standards that they used were a little different and constantly evolving, so that does affect the measurement a bit. But a couple things I'll point out. At the very bottom line where you see 2014 unaudited, and it's kind of the report that we've been giving you, we had $60 million in general fund spending and $15 million in undesignated reserves, and our policy is 17%, and we're at 24%, so we're above the policy. So 2014 was the best financial year in my 30 years of the county, so there hasn't been a year better than 2014 for any of the years that I've been CFO for the county. 2014 has been the best year that I've experienced. So the That's good news, but the other thing is, the other thing to expect is, don't expect that to happen every year. You know, it might happen once every 30 years. So it would be nice if that pattern continued, but it was unusual for us to have a year that was as good as 2014. Another thing that's interesting is looking at the 2008 and 2009 rows, you can see how quickly the tide can turn, our financial fortunes can reverse. We're a large organization. We have 1,000 employees. We buy up millions of delinquent taxes. We have probably $500 million or more in replacement value assets. So although sometimes $15 million or $10 million seems like a lot of money, it really isn't a lot of money for an organization of our size. And when you consider what we do, looking at that 2009 year, you can see how immediately after the Great Recession, we were at just under $6 million in reserves. You can see how precipitously it dropped. It dropped from a high of $11 million in 2005 to just under $6 million in 2009.
That was the crash, right?
That was the, that was after the Great Recession and the impact of the Great Recession. Now, the thing that we did was our policy lets us spend money in excess of 17%. And so what we did was we used some of our reserves to fund capital in lieu of bonding. And right after we did that, the Great Recession happened, and that $6 million number is artificially high because we refunded half of what we spent and put that back in the general fund. So had it not been for that, that number would have been below $5 million. We would have, our reserves would have sunk to a level of below $5 million. So this number, although we're in very good financial condition, and 24% is a good percent for us, for an organization like ours, it can change quickly.
Look at the 87. About 2.6, and it goes down at 89, yeah. $236,000.
I had to do
down to 96 in 91.
I had to do a lot of accounting, all lawful accounting, to have the number not be.
What is that in today's dollars?
All according to general accepted accounting principles, but I had to do a lot in order to not be in the red in those years. The economy wasn't good then either. So. But in today's dollars, I don't know, you might double it. I don't know, but it's still
in 91. We were broke.
Yeah, it was way less than we should have for an organization like that. Now, one thing I'll say, for a AAA rated county in the state of Wisconsin, the average reserve is just under 30% of general fund. So you can see that we're getting close to that. The reason why they have 29% and why the rating agencies think 29% is an acceptable level is because they view Wisconsin as having less flexibility at the local level than other states. So the national average might be in the low to mid 20s, but they want us to have more than that because we have less flexibility. Now, one thing we've been able to do here is develop a process that has more flexibility than most of the state at almost any local level. And Ron, you just talked about it at Gateway. We have more flexibility in our reserve, in our budgeting process than that, and it's all allowable.
Gateway's AAA, by the way.
Yeah, great. Gateway's AAA, right? They're AAA.
Nice.
So one thing to consider is that if we could target an improvement in our bond rating, it could be anywhere from 10 to 40 basis points reduction. And if we're going to carry roughly $100 million in debt, then that's roughly $200,000 to $400,000 a year less in debt service, which is about where we would be. And we can get more into those kinds of data as we work through that. And we can actually get the documents, and we'll work with our financial advisor and put documents in front of the committee on all of this, if you want to proceed and examine this. But so one thing is there would be some value in considering improving our bond rating, or at least maintaining our bond rating. Another thing, again, I want to put some lessons learned here into play too. I just talked about one lesson learned where our policy lets us spend on a pay-as-you-go basis if it's over 17%, and the lesson learned there was right when we did that, the economy crashed and our reserves were dropping precipitously, and we had to scramble a bit to keep our reserves from getting too low and putting our bond rating at risk. Another lesson learned is we had at the time almost $15 billion in valuation, equalized value, and it dropped down to roughly $12 billion. And tax delinquencies went from $3 million to $8 million on that base. So it jumped about, let's say, $4 million or $5 million. It didn't take long for that to happen. So that's another lesson learned that I think it would be wise for me to advise the committee. If the economy swings, it can swing fast, and we could end up buying a lot of tax delinquencies and easily draining our reserve, and we're the ones that have to do that. So those are a couple of things to keep in mind, and that's one of the reasons why I distributed this, so we could look at history and consideration if we are indeed going to review this policy.
What was our bond rating in some of those years? If you can remember.
Yeah. Well, we went up to AA1. I think it was 2011 that we went up to AA1. We were AA3 in the late 90s, early 2000. I'm using the Moody's scale. So as our reserves improved, we got bond rating increases, but recently we had a decrease because of the decline in equalized value. And it was kind of funny because I was just looking at that again this morning, and we went from $15 billion to $12 billion, and we survived almost to the end. And if we could have just survived one more year, we would have got an uptick both in our reserves and our value, but I couldn't get us through just one more year. They reduced it. I couldn't get us through 2013. Had I been able to get into 2014, I might have been able to hold that bond rating level, but we tried. The main reason they reduced it was because of the decline in property valuation. And again, as you remember, the very next year we had the first increase after the Great Recession. We had in 2014, we had the first decline in tax delinquencies since 2005. So, but the other thing that happened was Moody's changed its rating process. So had Moody's not changed its rating process, we might have been able to get through that last year and might have been able to hold our bond rating at AA1. So all of that is part of managing the cost of money and keeping that sound bond rating makes money cost less and saves money when we bring budgets into you. So that's a little bit of history. This reserve policy that we got now, it's worked well for us and we stuck to it and we didn't we didn't panic. When our reserves declined below 17%, we said things are cyclical, let us get through the cycles, and we expect we'll come back to the 17%, and it did, and it worked. The policy also permits us to have to spend some money on reserves. That's worked very well for us. It's given us budgetary flexibility. That number of $250,000, that number's worked fairly well when we needed to help Kemper or we wanted to do a study or whatever else we wanted to do. That has worked well. So that part of the policy has worked well. Having the policy in and of itself works well. The rating agencies respect this, and they give us, they check the box that we have appropriate policies in this area when they see these policies. And they want copies of all the policies. In the last reading or review I went through, we gave them a bunch of policies. They wanted to see the reports we gave you, so some of the reports that we give you every month, like one of them you've got on your desk tonight, we sent those. We sent them a thick bundle of stuff. They vet this stuff. They don't just take our word for it. So a couple other things we're seeing about the reserve policy, it gave us flexibility. We didn't cut spending or lay off employees when we went below the 17%. Which I think was wise. I think the policy should maintain that function and that feature. And it allows us to use our reserves if need be in the event of unusual circumstances. And certainly the Great Recession was, I think, the most unusual circumstance I've seen in my four-decade career in finance. So I think maintaining that type of flexibility in this policy was wise. This has served us well. So that's a little background. I think taking the policy that we have now, I think we could improve it and decide what our objectives are. One objective may be to maintain or improve our bond rating. Another objective may be to make sure we have sufficient cushion in the event of a downturn that we just experienced. Another objective may be to be sure that we make sure we have cash to buy delinquencies in the event of a downturn. Those are some things to take into consideration that I think would improve a policy like this in the eyes of the public that looks at our finances, and the bond buying public in addition to that buys our bonds. So. You know, that's just a very brief overview of this, and I guess it's up to the chairman and the committee. If we can have discussions, we can get input from think about what policy directions you'd like to take, and we could go through. And we've done this before with several things. There may be a couple of you that might be new to this, but we have gone through policy building process, and we do it over several committee meetings in a little work session type thing, like kind of what I'm doing now. But I think a worthy goal would be to review the policy, weigh in on what we think is a sound recommendation that we could make to the board, and then integrate it into our 2016 budget process as far as the timing of what we would do. So you have plenty of time to think about this and plenty of time to. That concludes my comments, Mr. Right. Chair.
You can put that on the agenda.
Good.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
If I read you right, I guess you're suggesting that we can reduce our reserves if necessary to, would that hurt our bond rating? Question
well,
number one.
Is that a question?
Yeah.
I want to make sure I go through the chair. That's not what I'm saying. I think if our goal is to maintain our bond rating, we probably don't want to reduce the reserves. We may want to consider maintaining a higher cushion, considering what we just went through with the Great Recession, and certainly not using cash to pay for ongoing costs.
Okay.
So that we shouldn't use reserves to pay for ongoing recurring costs. That will really hurt your bond rating to do that. So.
All right. Anything further? Seeing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? And we are now adjourned.
We meet at 7 o'clock next week on the 21st.
Yeah, I think
so. We need the whole 7 o'clock.
Is it 5 o'clock?
5 o'clock.
No, 7
committee
o'clock.
To get these reserves up here.
Committee of the Whole?
Al, is the Committee of the Whole at 7 o'clock or 5 o'clock?
I don't know.
I thought it was 7 o'clock.
I thought the letter said 5.
7 o'clock.
I would have a hard time believing that.
It was in the letter.
The Whole, 7 o'clock.
Oh. You got the letter, right?